This talk is based sort of loosely on three papers, one with my collaborators at Santa Cruz, my former advisor Stefano Profumo, and grad student Laurel Stevenson Haskins and Max Wainwright. Another paper that I wrote with David Morrissey, his grad student Nikita, and Carlos, who is here. And then finally, I'm going to talk a little bit about this paper that I wrote last month. And sort of all of these papers are focused around this idea of what I call exotic electric symmetry breaking. And I want to, before I give an outline or anything, I just want to give an overview of exactly what I mean when I'm talking about this. So everyone's familiar with the standard picture of electroweak symmetry breaking. So this is the picture that we get from the standard model. And this is that at high temperatures in the early universe, you have some background field with electroweak quantum numbers that stabilize at the origin of its potential. So this corresponds to a vanishing vacuum expectation value for the, in this case, this would be the standard model Higgs field. And it stabilized at its potential because at high temperatures, the leading corrections to the potential are quadratic in temperature. And so this acts as an effective thermal mass that traps the field at its origin. So electroweak symmetry is unbroken. But then at some lower temperatures, and ultimately at zero temperature, these quadratic corrections to the potential, so the thermal mass starts to decrease, and eventually the field is no longer stabilized at the origin, and it's free to transition and roll to some minimum where it has some non-zero field value, which corresponds to a vacuum expectation value for the Higgs, and this breaks electroweak symmetry. So the standard picture of electroweak symmetry breaking, sort of the most basic in the standard model, is just this sort of one event where you have one field localized at the stabilized at the origin, which then at some point in the early universe can transition to some non-zero field value. And the question that's going to guide this talk is whether it was really that simple in the early universe. So specifically, were there really only two distinct phases? So was it really just there's one field trapped at the origin, and then at some low temperature, it rolls to some other minimum and it breaks electric symmetry? Or were there other vacua involved? Did it only involve one field direction, the field that we ultimately associate with the standard model like Higgs, changing its vacuum expectation value? Or did it involve multiple fields? And I think importantly to frame this discussion, really we want to know what the consequences are. Because if this thing is happening in the early universe and it doesn't really change anything, any of the cosmological history, or tell us anything about beyond the standard model physics, then kind of what's the point? But the main thrust of this talk, and the main reason I think it's interesting to think about these types of models and these types of scenarios, is because they have implications for baryogenesis. And specifically, these exotic features of electroweak symmetry breaking can lead to novel effects in electroweak baryogenesis. And also, they have important consequences that we can try to look for at present day experiments. So sort of the whole talk is going to be centered around the idea of this exotic electroweak symmetry breaking, and specifically how it might tie into generating the baryonic symmetry of the universe at the electroweak scale. So that's sort of the guiding question. So just a brief outline, I want to talk a bit more about exotic symmetry breaking and also electroweak baryogenesis. And then I'm going to focus on two, not specific models, but just kind of classes of models that can realize sort of non-standard phase history in the universe. So the first are models that involve just adding a singlet scalar field that couples to the Higgs. And there you have an additional field direction that can change its BEV, and you can get different vacua. So I'll talk about that. And then I'll go into a more, slightly more robust scenario where you can have an inert SU2 multiplet that couples to the Higgs. And there you have some new field that's charged under the electroweak interactions, and so you can imagine realizing novel patterns of breaking electroweak symmetry in the early universe. And then I'll conclude. And feel free to stop me anywhere along the way if you have a question. So the reason I think it's interesting to think about electroweak baryogenesis, it's a mechanism for baryogenesis that's hinted at by the standard model itself. So in principle, actually, all the ingredients for electric baryogenesis are present in the standard model. We all know that baryon number is violated in the standard model. You have charge violation also in the electroweak sector. You have CP violation in the CKM sector. And if you imagine, you know that the electric symmetry has to be broken. So if the electroweak phase transition were first order, you would have the requisite out of equilibrium scenario. And the purple words that are highlighted are correspond to the well-known Sakharov conditions that any theory needs to, in a Lorentzian variant, setting, these conditions need to be satisfied in order to explain the baryon asymmetry of the universe. So the standard model in principle can do it, and it can do this at the electroweak scale, and because it involves electroweak scale physics, it's testable. And I think that's one of the most compelling reasons to think about this, because we have access potentially to test this scenario for baryogenesis, and so we should do it if we can. So the standard model hints at this mechanism, and the basic picture involves several steps. So the first step is you need to have a first-order phase transition. So a first-order phase transition is one at which two vacua, which side of this are you supposed to point with? This one? I don't know, this is kind of fun. So a first-order phase transition can occur when two vacua they coexist for some range of temperatures. So when two vacua exist for some range of temperatures, there's a barrier that separates the two. And you can imagine the field classically is trapped at the origin in this picture, but it can tunnel either through quantum effects or it can thermally fluctuate over the barrier. And this corresponds to nucleation of bubbles of broken electroweak phase or bubbles in which this scalar field has a non-zero vacuum expectation value. And these bubbles nucleate, and inside the bubble, the field has a VEV, outside it does not. These bubbles, because of the free energy difference between the phases, that acts as a pressure difference, so that drives the expansion of the bubbles. So these bubbles will expand, eventually collide, and fill the universe. So the idea of electric baryogenesis is using this out of equilibrium situation of these bubbles nucleating and expanding to generate a baryon asymmetry. So the first step, you need this phase transition. Then you need to imagine, so the basic picture is imagining some CP violating scattering between a new fermion, say, and the Higgs field in the bubble wall. So you can imagine that the reflection coefficient, for example, for a fermion is not the same as for an antifermion in interacting with the Higgs field in the bubble wall. And so this will lead to some CP asymmetry diffusing out in front of the bubble. And the final step is because sphalerons are suppressed in the broken phase, but are unsuppressed outside of the bubble, and sphalerons only act on left-handed charge densities, the SU2 sphalerons. So you can imagine if you have some net density of left-handed particles over left-handed antiparticles, you can imagine then having these sphalerons source an asymmetry between baryons over antibaryons. And that is, so this is a baryon asymmetry that's now diffusing in front of the bubble. And the final step is capture by the bubble. So there's some current that's diffusing in front, and the bubble is expanding. And at some point, the diffusion is, so there are processes that slow down the diffusion of this current in front of the bubble. The bubble eventually catches up with this baryon asymmetry that's diffusing in front. And inside the bubble, the sphalerons are effectively quenched. And so once the bubble captures this current, you freeze in that asymmetry that you've generated outside of the bubble. And that asymmetry becomes the baryon asymmetry that we observe today. So that's the standard picture of electroweak baryogenesis. And like I said, in the standard model, in principle, you have all the ingredients to do this. But it turns out that once you start actually doing measurements and experiments, it turns out that it's really not the case. It's incompatible with the Higgs mass that we observe. So in the standard model, you don't actually have a first-order electroweak phase transition. And that's because the observed Higgs mass is just too heavy. And the Higgs mass is correlated with the quartic coupling of the Higgs and the potential. And the larger the quartic coupling, essentially, the weaker the phase transition. So for 125 GeV Higgs, you still predict, using perturbation theory, you can predict a phase transition that has that's very weak. But it turns out when you actually do this carefully and do the lattice calculation, that there is no first-order phase transition in the standard model. It's actually a smooth crossover. So you don't have a first-order phase transition. But generically, physics beyond the standard model can remedy this, or can actually give you a strong first-order phase transition. And there's some sort of generic possibilities. So one that people have thought about a lot is that at finite temperature, the effective potential receives these corrections. I already mentioned these quadratic terms. But you also get, scalars also give you these cubic terms in the effective potential that have the right sign to actually generate a barrier between phases. So if you imagine some new scalars that are coupled to the Higgs, so this the cubic term goes like the field-dependent mass to the third of these new scalars. So you need to have these fields that are coupled significantly to the Higgs. So if you have some new scalar fields that are coupled significantly to the Higgs, you can imagine generating some barrier thermally, and then realizing a first-order phase transition. And another possibility, which is the one I'm going to focus on today, are that you can actually do this without resorting to any thermal corrections or loop corrections. You can actually do this using tree-level terms in the effective potential. So, for example, this is the most general renormalizable effective potential or potential scalar potential that I can write down for just a real singlet scalar field. And so you see that I'm allowed to write down cubic terms in the effective potential already at tree level. And so you can imagine if these new scalar fields are allowed to obtain vacuum expectation values during the phase transition, that I might be able to actually make the phase transition first order. And because of the new field directions, some of these models will predict novel phase transition histories involving different paths in field space, and also exotic patterns of symmetry breaking. Involving the different scalar fields if the field is charged. And I think the real compelling reason to think about these tree-level models is because the LHC has already very tightly constrained models with both thermally induced barriers and also loop-driven models, because these models inherently rely on new light scalars that are coupled significantly to the Higgs. And this is highly constrained. And the canonical example, I think, is the minimal supersymmetric standard model, or the MSSM, with light stops. So I think for a while, this was really considered the most promising setting for beyond the standard model physics to realize electric baryogenesis. Because if you have a light right-handed stop, for example, you are able to generate these finite temperature cubic terms and get a first order phase transition. That's shown in this plot here from this paper. It's really hard to see, but the horizontal axis is the standard model like Higgs mass, and the vertical axis is the stop mass, the right-handed stop mass. So in this yellow region, you have a strongly first-order phase transition, which is defined by this ratio phi over TC greater than 1. So phi is the field value of the minimum in the broken phase at Tn, which is the nucleation temperature, so the temperature of the bubble. So you see that this calculation is done in perturbation theory. But you see that the perturbative result tells you that you need to have a right-handed stop less than about 120 GeV in order to realize this in the MSSM. And that's problematic. It's problematic for really two reasons. The first is because when you have such a light stop, it affects the Higgs production rates. And it increases the gluon fusion production rate because you have a new diagram with stops running in the loop. And these papers showed that essentially, so you increase the production rate by quite a bit. It might be possible to decrease some of the to balance out the increased production rate by fiddling with some of the branching fractions of the Higgs, but it's very difficult to do. And probably more difficult is just the fact that these light stops are highly constrained by direct searches at the LHC already. So it turns out that if you do this calculation using lattice techniques, you can have a strong first-order phase transition for stop masses around 160 GeV or less. So it's a little bit better, but still this is in in a lot of tension, I think, right now with LHC measurements, if not altogether ruled out already. And similar statements can be made for several other models in which you have these light new scalars with large couplings to the Higgs. So it's just all the more reason, I think, to think about these models with tree level, with the possibility of realizing a barrier at tree level. So there are two scenarios, as I said, that I'm going to be focusing on. So the first, let's think about scenarios in which there's just an additional singlet scalar field that we add to the potential. So here is the potential again for just a real singlet scalar field, not assuming any discrete symmetries under which this singlet transforms. And again, you see these cubic terms that I can write down in the potential. The nice thing about these types of models is that you can actually get a strong first-order phase transition for rather generic parameter choices that are fully consistent with 125 GeV Higgs. And that's because you can actually get a strong first-order phase transition without cranking up any of the couplings. So in the loop-induced case, you need some large couplings. But in this case, so in this paper, for example, they looked at the real singlet extension of the standard model. And they showed that, I'll show in a couple slides, but essentially you can get the strong first-order phase transition even in the limit of zero mixing of this new singlet with the Higgs. So one canonical example of this is the supersymmetric incarnation in the NMSSM. So the NMSSM, so we looked at this in our paper with Stefano, Max, and Laurel, and we looked at the NMSSM in which the superfields have a discrete Z3 symmetry. So you forbid any dimensionful terms in the superpotential. So the superpotential just looks like the MSSM with no mu term, as well as these cubic couplings. And right away you see that these cubic couplings are going to lead to new cubic terms in the effective potential. So there, because of this new singlet field direction, the NMSSM, there are a variety of exotic phase transition histories possible. So remember, in the standard model, you have a one-step phase transition from the Higgs field being localized at the origin, being stabilized at the origin, to the field being having some non-zero expectation value. So that would correspond in this schematic plot to this situation here. So this horizontal axis is meant to represent the standard model-like Higgs direction, and this vertical axis is the singlet field direction. And so in some cases in the NMSSM, you can just get a one-step phase transition where you now have a singlet with a VEV in the electric broken phase. But you can also realize these other possibilities. So you can have a phase transition in the early universe where the field tunnels from the origin to some phase in which the Higgs field has no VEV, but the singlet field has a VEV. You can have a phase transition in which in the NMSSM, you have two Higgs doublets. So you can have a scenario in which you have a first-order phase transition in one of the Higgs doublet directions. So in this case, it would be the H up direction, and then you have a subsequent phase transition to the electroweak vacuum. Or you can have a two-step transition with two strongly first-order, which are both strongly first-order. The first being a first-order transition to a vacuum in which the singlet has a VEV, but the SU2 Higgs does not. And the second transition in the other direction to the standard electroweak vacuum. So because of this additional field, you have these different possibilities. And like I said, it's actually sort of difficult to test at colliders. So these are just plots from two examples of these singlet models. So the top is for this XSM, which is just the real singlet extension of the standard model. The horizontal axis is the singlet-like mass. The vertical axis parameterizes the mixing between the two. So zero would be zero mixing between the standard model-like Higgs and the singlet. And you see these orange points are allowed phenomenologically these different panels correspond to the expected reach of different experiments. So this is LHC with 300 inverse femtobarn. This is high luminosity LHC. This is ILC. Black points are points with a strong first-order phase transition. And the orange and black points that are not shaded over by the white would predict deviations in the various Higgs couplings below the resolution of the given experiment. So you see that even at the ILC, you would have a difficult time testing some of these models just because you can have very little mixing. The same is true in the NMSSM, actually. So this is from our paper. And here you see, these blue points are various benchmark points that we considered. And plotted are the predicted signal strength. So this is the gamma-gamma signal strength, gluon-gluon fusion and associated production. And the vertical axis is VBF. And you see that the standard model would be on this one point right here where the axes are. And these contours are from this global fit, which is old by now. So this star has shifted more, the central value has shifted closer to the standard model. But you see that even in the NMSSM, you can have points that are consistent with a very standard model like Higgs, but realize all these different patterns of symmetry breaking in the early universe. So one of the things that I think is interesting about these types of models in which you have this additional singlet field that's participating in the transition is that these models generically predict fast-moving bubble walls. So remember, electric baryogenesis relies on the expansion of this bubble and the diffusion of some current out in front of the bubble. So the bubble wall is an important input into these types of calculations. And the reason that the additional field gives you fast bubble walls is because essentially the additional field contributes to the free energy difference between the phases. And so that corresponds to a pressure difference. And so it increases the pressure driving the expansion of the bubble. You can see this from the equation of motion for the condensate. So that's here. And if you just multiply, so in one field dimension, if you multiply by phi prime and integrate across, you can actually see that this term corresponds to a vacuum energy difference, so the difference in vacuum energy between the phases. And this term corresponds to friction that arises from the passage of the bubble wall through the plasma. So the situation is that you have friction acting against the acceleration of the bubble wall, but you have the vacuum energy difference driving the expansion. And when those two are precisely balanced, then you get a steady expansion velocity. And that's really what you want for electric baryogenesis, because you don't want some wall that... So if the friction is not substantial enough to balance out the pressure difference driving the expansion, then the bubble wall will accelerate indefinitely and approach the speed of light, and it'll do so very quickly. So you won't have any chance of doing electric baryogenesis, because when the bubble is expanding that quickly, there's no time for the CP asymmetry to diffuse in front of the bubble. So the field with the changing VEV contributes to the pressure difference. So just putting a little more concretely about what I just said, the reason that you need slow bubbles for electric baryogenesis is because you really want the time scale for capture by the bubble to be longer than the time it takes for you to convert a significant amount of the CP asymmetry to a baryon asymmetry. And you can work it out that you can write down a condition for that in terms of D is just a generic diffusion constant that parameterizes the diffusion of the current in front. L wall is the width of the bubble wall. And N is just some number that parameterizes how many timescales you really need to get an efficient conversion of the CPA symmetry. And you find that this requires roughly that the wall move less than about 0.1 to 0.3 wall velocity with the wall velocity less than 0.1 to 0.3, at least in the standard model. And it certainly needs to move slower than the speed of sound in the plasma. So the speed of sound in the plasma is around 0.57, it's 1 over root 3. And if the bubble wall is expanding supersonically, if the bubble is expanding supersonically, then if it's expanding that quickly, then there's no time at all for the diffusion to happen in front of the bubble. So you get essentially no diffusion, and you get no conversion by sphalerons, and so you get no baryon asymmetry. And that's shown quantitatively here in this plot from this paper. So this is a plot of the baryon asymmetry in the MSSM for a particular CP-violating phase and assumption about the CP-violating sources. And it's plotted as a function of the wall velocity. And you see that the wall velocity really peaks around 2 or 3 times 10 to the minus 2. And when you get to lower wall velocities, the bubble wall is expanding too slowly, so you have some quasi-equilibrium situation. When it's expanding too quickly, the diffusion is inefficient. And you see that by the time you get to a relatively fast bubble, you essentially get no baryon asymmetry. So the point of all this is when you write down some of these singlet models and you scan over parameters and you find regions where you have a strong first order phase transition, there's a possibility that you actually can't realize electric baryogenesis just because the bubbles are moving too quickly. And so in my recent paper, I looked at this in just this real singlet extension of the standard model. And the results are shown here on the left. And so this is the horizontal axis is the strength of the phase transition. So for electric weak baryogenesis, you want to live on this side of 1. And the vertical axis is the wall velocity. And these are just for 2 representative sets of parameter points. And you see that for strength of order 1, you're really at wall velocity 0.2, which is already pushing you down towards the tail here. And even worse, for some choices of parameters, for example, this black curve, you end up getting no subsonic solutions to the equations of motion for strong enough phase transitions. So in that case, you cannot use this mechanism to realize electric baryogenesis. And this is just a generic consequence of having this exotic or extra field direction involved in the phase transition. So it can be challenging for electric baryogenesis. It doesn't mean that it's not possible, but it's something that I think has been a bit underappreciated and needs to be thought about a little bit more. The other thing that's interesting about this extra field direction that's changing its BEV is that it can be interesting for gravitational wave production. So at the phase transition, as the bubble expands, it induces turbulence in the plasma, and also the collisions between the other bubbles can give rise to an observable gravity wave signature. The peak amplitude is proportional to the latent heat, and also depends on the wall velocity. So the faster the wall, the more turbulence you induce, the more energetic the collisions, and the better the prospect for observing something like this through something like ELISA or Big Bang Observer. So I don't have time to go into more about that, but the takeaways from this first class of models is that these singlet extended Higgs sectors can give you a strong first order phase transition without large deviations in standard model like Higgs properties. You can actually get some of these exotic vacua because of the new field that's involved in the potential, but the bubbles often tend to expand rather quickly. But maybe this is good. Maybe this means that in these types of models, you can often test the phase transition through looking for gravity waves. So in all of these transitions, in most of these transitions, you still needed the sort of standard model-like phase transition to the usual electric vacuum in order to do electric baryogenesis, right? You had these other vacua that you could transition to, but they're mostly in the singlet direction, so you can't use them for electric baryogenesis. So a natural question is whether it's possible to have a truly exotic stage of electric symmetry breaking in the early universe during which electric baryogenesis can occur. So that can be realized in these inert multiplet extensions of the standard model. So there, the idea is you first break electric symmetry by a transition to an exotic vacuum, and then you have some subsequent transition to the standard vacuum. And this requires an additional field that's charged under the electric interactions, and it typically needs to be inert because, inert is essentially code for a discrete Z2 symmetry on this new multiplet that forbids couplings of the multiplet to standard model fermions. So I don't want this to have couplings to standard model fermions, and I'd also, so the reason that I want it to be inert is that I do not want it to have a vacuum expectation value at zero temperature, or at least I want the vacuum expectation value to be very small, because if you have a large vacuum expectation value, then you get very large contributions to the electric precision observables. So you want the field to be inert. Another reason you want the field to be inert is because if the field had coupled as the standard model Higgs does to the standard model fermions, then you have large contributions to the thermal mass of this field. And what you want is a field with a thermal mass that's small enough so that it gets destabilized at some high temperature compared to the electroweak phase transition. So for this reason, you want an inert multiplet of SU2. And this was first really studied in a real triplet extension by Hiren Patel and Michael Ramsey-Musoff a couple years ago. And this is a plot from their paper that illustrates schematically the idea. So here this sigma is the neutral triplet, the neutral component of the triplet. And so at some early time at high temperature, you get a first order phase transition to this vacuum, and then at some later time, you transition to a vacuum in which this new multiplet, the neutral component, has no VEV, and then you end up in this sort of standard model-like vacuum.
How important is it that you have a Z2? I mean, wouldn't sufficiently exotic multiplet just forbid you from writing down couplings to turn down?
Yeah, so it really... Okay, you can probably get around it from being inert, but the real reason is you really so the thermal mass of the standard model like Higgs is dominated by the top contribution, right? So by the top Yukawa, and so really having an inert state that doesn't couple to much besides the gauge bosons and the Higgs just allows you to have a smaller thermal mass. That's really the key. The nice thing about this is the general features of this type of scenario can be understood via a very straightforward, simple toy model. So the toy model involves two complex scalars, phi1 and phi2, which we assume is the neutral component of some new SU2 multiplet. And phi1 will ultimately identify with the standard model Higgs, and phi2 is this new inert state. And so, with this Z2 symmetry, I can write down this potential, and this phi1 has a Yukawa-like coupling to some top-like fermion, T. So in this toy model, you can actually just look at the zero temperature vacuum structure. You can define these quantities, delta lambda 1, delta lambda 2. And there are three distinct vacuum configurations at zero temperature, modulo swapping 1 and 2. So the first is you can have a situation at zero temperature where V1, zero, so this is the electroweak-like vacuum, is a stable minimum of the potential, and this exotic vacuum is unstable. You can also have the situation at zero temperature where you have an electroweak vacuum and an exotic vacuum that are both stable minima of the potential. And you can have a situation, if both of these quantities are greater than zero, you can have the case where both the electroweak vacuum and the exotic vacuum are actually not minima, but they're saddle points, and the true minimum of the potential at zero temperature lies somewhere in the valley between. So really, for this idea of breaking electric symmetry through this exotic multiplet, you really want either one of these two scenarios. So you want, and ultimately, I'll show that you really want this first scenario, because if you have two vacua at zero temperature, what often tends to happen is the field will get caught in this minimum, so the exotic minimum, so you'll break electroweak symmetry. But if there's a barrier between the two vacua at zero temperature, the tunneling rate between the two vacua is typically highly suppressed, and so you will have a hard time completing the phase transition to the electroweak vacuum, so you end up in the wrong vacuum. So really, you want this condition to be realized, and this is just a simple condition that you can write down from these tree-level considerations of the potential. And there are a couple more requirements that you need parametrically in order to satisfy these, in order to realize this scenario. So these two are the ones I just mentioned. You also want ideally you want the standard model to be the absolute, you want it to be the global minimum of the potential. You want the standard vacuum to be the global minimum, so that gives you this condition. And you want the exotic minimum to be destabilized at a higher temperature than the standard model vacuum. So all of this is to say that this scenario of breaking electroweak symmetry with some transition to an exotic vacuum actually gives you very concrete predictions for what parameters you can actually use in your model to realize this. So this is shown in this plot for the toy model here. Kind of looks like a dolphin or something. So I call it like the dolphin plot. So you can realize this, and so inside this wedge, you satisfy all four of these conditions. So just to give you an idea, so the horizontal axis is the exotic quartic coupling, so the quartic coupling of the inert scalar. The vertical axis is the mass parameter in the potential for this inert scalar. We chose, so lambda 3 is the cross-quartic coupling between the two. We chose this value, and y sub t is the Yukawa-like coupling of the standard model like Higgs to this top fermion. So what you really need for this scenario is you need to live within this wedge. So above the wedge, the standard model like vacuum is unstable, below this wedge, the exotic vacuum, the electroweak phase transition will happen first before the transition to the exotic vacuum. And this diagonal line differentiates between the regions where you have a barrier between two minima at zero temperature. So on to the left of this diagonal line, you can get stuck in the wrong minimum. But to the right, the exotic vacuum is unstable at zero temperature, and so you'll always end up in the electroweak in the standard model like vacuum. But the point, so the point is, just these simple considerations give you specific predictions for the parameters. And this is a toy model, but you can imagine applying it to a realistic inert doublet model. And the potential is written here. This potential maps directly onto this toy model. You have these additional terms because now these are actually charged under SU2. But you can, so you can study the potential for these types of models, which people have thought about a lot for, because they give you a stable, neutral scalar that can act as your dark matter, for example. But you can study this model and ask to what extent this two-step electroweak baryogenesis, this exotic electroweak symmetry breaking can occur. To do that, you need to fix some of the other parameters. Just really quickly, so specifically, we chose to realize, so there are certain enhanced symmetry configurations in this model. So we chose this lambda phi h twiddle to be very small and less than zero. So what that does is that gives you a small splitting between the neutral and the charged states, and it realizes an approximate custodial symmetry. So it reduces the impact of these new scalars to electric precision observables. And we also take this lambda 5 to be very small. And what this corresponds to is a small CP even, CP odd mass splitting. And this allows you essentially to evade LEP constraints, because as I'm going to show and argue in a few slides, these types of models tend to predict quite generically light charged states and light inert states, which are constrained by things like LEP. But if you take this lambda 5 to be very small, splitting is small. And so if the splitting is actually less than about 8 GeV, the usual LEP constraints, for example, trilepton, if you produce a charged and neutral state, the LEP constraints fall off just because the final decay products are very soft. So these choices correspond to approximate symmetries in this potential. So if you have both, you have an approximate global SU2 symmetry. If you only have lambda 5, 0, then you have a global U1. And of course, neither, you have this Z2. But some of these parameter choices can be realized exactly. So you can have this U1 be exact, for example. Okay, so what does this mean for this exotic electroweak symmetry breaking? So here we varied. Here we work in this model. We varied the sterile quartic. We varied the mass parameter of the inert state. And we had to choose a value for the cross-quartic coupling. And the rest of the parameters are determined by requiring 125 GeV Higgs and the correct Higgs VEV. So this wedge here, bounded by the blue lines, corresponds to that wedge that I showed in the toy model. So inside this wedge, you can actually have this exotic electroweak symmetry breaking with a strong first order phase transition. To the right of this diagonal line, you have you only have one minimum at zero temperature. So there, you're guaranteed not to get stuck in the wrong vacuum. And so this scenario can be realized within this wedge. These contours, the dashed ones that are labeled, correspond to the strength of the exotic phase transition, so phi over TC. And these numbers and the green contours correspond to the strength of the standard model-like phase transition. And these points are points that we found by scanning and doing a numerical calculation of the tunneling rate between the two vacua. And so these points, they correspond to situations in which you can actually realize this transition between the origin and the exotic direction, and then the exotic to the standard model direction without getting stuck. And you see that this only happens in a relatively small region of the parameter space. In particular, you need a small quartic coupling for the inert state. That's because the larger the quartic coupling, the smaller the strength of the phase transition into the, to the inert vacuum. So you want a small quartic. You want a small mass parameter for the inert state in the potential, because that corresponds to smaller thermal mass, so smaller mass, at finite temperature mass, which allows you to destabilize the inert direction first. And you can see by looking at this plot on the right that you need a small cross-quartic between the sterile state and the Higgs state, because as you increase that, you see this diagonal line moves to the right. You can see that from these conditions that I wrote down a few slides ago, but essentially, and so in this region, all of this wedge features two vacua at zero temperature, and so we scanned using Cosmo transitions for points such that the transition completes, and we found no points that the transition actually completes. So you get stuck in the wrong vacuum. So, I mean, these are specific points, but they actually tell you something quite general, which is that this scenario predicts or requires small quartic, small cross-quartic, small mass parameter in the potential. And of course, that tells you something about the spectrum at zero temperature. So if I write down just the tree level masses, this is the mass of the neutral state, assuming this U1 symmetry such that the CpEv and CpOdd states are degenerate, and they combine into this complex scalar, so the mass is given by this expression, and the mass of the charged state is given here. And you see that for small cross-quartic, small mass parameter, you get very light charged states, very light neutral inert states. And this is a generic prediction from this class of models of this exotic electroweak symmetry breaking. You predict these light states. And of course, there's strong constraints in this scenario. The strongest are actually from, as long as the mass splitting between the neutral to the two neutral states and the neutral and the charged states are small, the strongest constraints are actually from invisible Z decays and Higgs decays. So that really tells you that you want to live above about half the Higgs mass. But that's actually turns out to be incompatible with exotic electroweak baryogenesis in these minimal types of models. Because as you start increasing the mass, you have to increase one of the parameters. And as we saw in the last plot, you really need to live sort of in the low end of all, for all of these parameters. And that's also shown, the situation is shown here, where here is the, on the horizontal axis is the mass parameter, vertical axis is the cross-quartic. We found from the last plot that you really need to live around here, this cross-quartic 0.1, in order not to get stuck in the wrong vacuum. And it turns out that in all that region, you're below 63 GeV, and you can't reduce the couplings enough in order to, so you can imagine choosing very small couplings of the inert states to the standard model like Higgs to forbid or to reduce the invisible branching fraction. But it turns out that it's not possible to do and maintain this exotic electroweak symmetry breaking. So this tells you that, I mean, it's interesting because this scenario is incredibly predictive, and it tells you that actually in its minimal incarnations, it's already highly constrained. But you can imagine requiring some additional mass contribution to the inert states. One solution that we thought about in our paper was an additional singlet that obtains a VEV at some low temperature, temperature below the electroweak phase transition. And then you can get this extra contribution to the mass. You can increase the masses of all the inert states above 63 GeV, and you can do this while maintaining the viability of this exotic electroweak baryogenesis scenario. And the situation here for splitting of for a contribution of 60 GeV to the inert states is shown here. So here the axes are the same. It's the mass parameter and the cross-quartic. Dashed contours are contours of lightest neutral inert state mass. And dark contours are the gamma-gamma, the reduced coupling of Higgs to gamma-gamma in the... the reduced couplings of Higgs to gamma-gamma. So you see that you still predict quite sizable, even though you can now live here and be above half the Higgs mass for the lightest neutral state, the existence of this light charged state generically predicts substantial deviations in the Higgs to gamma-gamma signal strength. And this is something that in principle can be looked for and tested, and it's a concrete prediction of these types of models. So if this exotic electric symmetry breaking through this additional inert multiplet, if this is actually realized in nature, we should be able to look for it and see it. And finally, there's the question of whether this scenario is compatible with using the lightest inert neutral state to be to make up 100% of the observed dark matter density. So remember that you have this Z2 symmetry, so the lightest inert state is stable. In these different symmetry limits, you have different answers for how difficult it is to make this light state, the neutral state, your dark matter. But pretty much it always turns out that this scenario is difficult to make compatible with having this inert neutral state make up 100% of the observed dark matter abundance. That's because in this limit of approximate global SU2, the charge and neutral states are degenerate, or are nearly degenerate, so you have very efficient co-annihilation. Even if you break that, if you're in this global U1 limit, then the CP even CP odd states combine into a complex neutral scalar, and the scattering. So there you can have a substantial abundance, so you're not depleted as much as in the co-annihilation regime, but then you have dark matter that scatters very efficiently off nuclei through Z exchange. And this, it turns out, is ruled out for all the parameter space that we looked at.
If it's exactly.
So you can have... So if it's very slightly broken, then you can have the scattering will be inelastic, but there you still have Higgs exchange. And it turns out that for masses that are light enough, so remember this, we're predicting masses less than about 100 GeV. In that case, you can see you can convince yourself that you need this combination of couplings to satisfy this inequality. And again, this gives you some lower bound on this cross-quartic coupling, which was exactly the thing that's correlated with breaking electric symmetry through this exotic vacuum. So if you're able to have some mechanism to give you a larger contribution to these inert state masses at zero temperature and push this up, then you actually probably could make the neutral state the dark matter candidate. But just a generic prediction, generically in these types of models, it's somewhat difficult to make work. So what are the takeaways? Okay, so the real point is that I think for a long time people have thought about sort of these MSSM-like models, have thought about electric symmetry breaking as this singular event, one phase transition, one field direction, and that leads to concrete predictions also, but those concrete predictions are now being very thoroughly tested by the LHC. So I think it's important to realize that electric symmetry breaking didn't have to be so simple. It could have been somewhat more exotic. Specifically, you can have these models where you have a singlet, you can have multi-step phase transitions, which may be actually observable cosmologically through things like gravity wave production. You can have a strong first order electric phase transition for a very standard model like Higgs. And the one hurdle is that if the singlet VEV changes a lot during if the change is substantial across the bubble wall, that can pose a challenge for electric baryogenesis. Then in these inert multiplet extensions, you can have this novel pattern of electric symmetry breaking, and there's a very concrete prediction, which are these light states that are accessible in Higgs coupling measurements and possibly direct searches. And finally, I think it's important to stay tuned to this story because the LHC will continue to go forward in probing these types of models. But I think it's also important to keep in mind that we should try to understand as many probes and come up with as many probes of these types of scenarios of scenarios predicting a strongly first order phase transition as we can, so that we can test electric baryogenesis to the maximal extent possible. Because it's the one baryogenesis mechanism that gives you a concrete prediction for the scale of new physics, and hopefully within the next several years, several decades, we'll be able to concretely say one way or the other whether these types of mechanisms with non-standard electric symmetry breaking in the early universe are actually realized in nature. So I think it's an interesting problem that's timely and it's fun to work on. So that's all I have. So thanks.
inert thing, is there a place to put a new CPU phase or in the self-potential?
Yeah, you can. You can. So you have two doublets. So you can do it. We didn't attempt to do it. But yeah. I mean, so in principle,
even with Z2, right, you can still have a phase.
Yeah, you can. But so in all of our analysis, we assumed that the CP violation and the new sources of CP violation don't significantly affect the potential. But yeah, if you have new scalars that are involved in CP violation, then yes. But in principle, you can also just add new sources of CP violation that couple to the standard model Higgs and preserve the phase transition history.
In the singlet scenario, so you were making the point that we've got these fast bubble walls. Do you have some sense of where the optimal point is? Because, I know that criterion of BEV over T is yep. just sort of an approximate one.
Right.
So does it still work if you kind of make the velocity lower and maybe have more washout?
Yeah, so exactly. So the way you derive the phi over TC condition, you assume something like I have to be left with 10% of the of the initial asymmetry. So yeah, the same type of reasoning would apply here. It depends on how much CP violation you have. I mean that's going to affect how fast the bubble can be, right? But it's hard to write down a specific criterion like I need V wall to be less than this. But one thing that you can say is that you definitely need it to be subsonic, because then if it's moving faster than the speed of sound, there's no diffusion. So you need some other baryogenesis mechanism. So that's kind of a concrete thing you can say. And you saw like in some of these singlet cases, you can have no subsonic solution for strong enough phase transitions. So that's something concrete you can say.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank the speakers.
Thanks.